are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
He says what he wants, ain't holding nothing back, back. Got the recipe for life, and he's inspiring. He's not scared of any topic, from textile to gossip.
Talk Radio. This is Greg and Tamara Montana filling in for Max Tucci this Sunday night, and we are ecstatic to do that. So Greg and I are getting ready for a week-long relationship boot camp that's going to be taking place in Palm Springs the very first of February. So we're excited because part of signing up for being facilitators in a relationship workshop is nothing short of preparing ourselves for everything possible that any one of the couples may be feeling. So as Greg and I have committed to extraordinary relationships, really delving into what constitutes for the ultimate relationship, what constitutes for us being able to experience ourselves with an intimate partner and with the world, with our coworkers, with our family members, with the people that we are acquaintances that we run across. Who do we get to be? How do we observe ourselves behaving? And one of the things that comes up for Greg and I, and especially as we study the Course in Miracles, is that we have an opportunity to either present with the people that are closest to us lilies or thorns. And we hold lilies in one hand and we hold thorns in another. And part of what would cause us to barb or prick or poke or instigate conflict inside of relationships is feeling hurt ourselves. Because as Greg and I know, that hurt people. And healed people heal people.
And hurt has a purpose. Mm-hmm. So let's talk right now about the bottom line for relationships, because here's the bottom line, and we have tested this with a whole group of people, because we are going to present some powerful interactive stuff, and so we like to experiment with a lot of couples, and when we come up with something that we really feel is true and relevant, we test it, and this is passing the test. So here's the bottom line for relationships. There are two choices. You're going to go down one of two paths. And if you look at what makes relationships work, and when we talk about relationships work, we're talking about the one path called togetherness. Now, tell me if this is true for you. What makes relationships work? You're going to say things like communication, having date time, quality time together, your love language, whether it's touch or gift giving, or words of affirmation, appreciation. Now, take all of those things and notice that every single one of them falls under the category of togetherness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, take the things that Tamara's talking about where we are hurt, where we're upset. What is it that when your relationships aren't working, when they're breaking apart, when relationships are like really failing on an Olympic level, what's usually going on? Well, the ultimate is a divorce, or what leads up to a divorce, which we call a separation. And then all those little bitty pieces that lead to that, criticism, complaining, judgment, control, trying to control the other person or expecting them to change, expectations. Now notice that every one of these things falls under that one simple category of separation. Togetherness or separation. And what we want to present to you right now is that when you're hurt, that's a choice you make so that you can head down the path of separation. Because there's always something we can appreciate about our guest. But as Tamara was mentioning, hurt people hurt people. So if you don't mm-hmm. learn to process your hurt when someone hurts your feelings or is being critical or complaining or condemning or criticizing on any level, and you can't process it, What you're really struggling with is expectations. That you expect that they're going to do this instead of that, that you, instead of anticipating, like, wow, you remember in the beginning of the relationship, there was this whole period of like, oh my gosh, you know, what flavor ice cream do you love? And oh, that's incredible, mine too. And oh, you love this. Oh, that's great. And so you're so curious and interested. And then after a while in relationships, we have these expectations. Like, I'm not getting my needs met. You know, when you're falling in love, you don't worry about getting your needs met. You're so infatuated with the possibilities and the opportunities and the openness and all. So as relationships mature, there's got to be a way to let go of the hurt, of the pain, of the anger, and to reconnect with the love. And I think what Tamara is probably going to focus on a whole lot tonight is kindness. And together, we're going to be talking about kindness is the ultimate, and not just for relationships, but in general, in life, going through life as a kind person with a regular experience that you want to reach out to people, that you want to help them, that you want to be of service. And that's kindness. So what I wanted to really, you know, mention tonight was about the dream. And so here's an analogy for you, a metaphor that might help when you're stuck in relationships. Because if we can let that go, it'll clear the field for experiencing that kindness. So here it is. Imagine you're having a nightmare. You're laying in bed. You're dreaming up a storm. Your spouse is hacking you to pieces, maybe chopping your arm off. Or, you know, you're having this nightmare where, you know, you're killing an ex or, you know, or a monster or Godzilla or something. I don't care what it is. Your father-in-law or your mother-in-law or your ex-husband or your best friend. You know, crazy things happen in dreams, right? And you could lose a limb, or your teeth could get knocked out, or you could be, oh my God, you know, I've lost the whole lower half of my body. This stuff happens in nightmares. Now, question: when you're in the nightmare, is it real? It's 100% real when you're sleeping and you're in that nightmare. And when you wake up from the nightmare and you go, oh, thank God, it was just a dream. Oh my God. Oh, now question, do you then go to your spouse, your mother-in-law and say, "I can't believe you did that to me. You chopped my arm off." We don't do that, do we? It would be crazy to do that. They'd lock you up. And so a lot of the research that Tamara and I have done, and you know, I was a monk for a whole bunch of years, did a whole bunch of meditation, and I had an out-of-body experience. I guess you'd call it a near-death experience to a certain degree, but I was just like out of my body and floating above, and then all of a sudden I was back in my body. And it was weird because it was like being in an awake state and all of a sudden being in a nightmare and realizing, I'm dreaming right now. And what became so clear to me that has become clear to every person that's had a near-death experience is that this right now, you're listening to a conversation in a dream. And for most people in this country, for a lot of them anyway, in relationship, that dream is a nightmare. 60% of marriages end in divorce. And did you know that 1/3 of all murders in the U.S. are spousal murders? I mean, these are crazy statistics. And Tamara and I are committed to seeing that you experience the love and the peace like you've woken up from a nightmare into reality of love and kindness, where you're actually looking at your spouse and realizing they've never meant you any harm. Now, there are extreme cases, and we're not talking about those. If you have issues with a spouse that's violent or abusive, you need to acknowledge a boundary. There's social workers you can call. You can get help. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about you who are in a relationship that you know there's potential for love, and you're stuck. And you know you're stuck, like you're in a nightmare and there's no place to go. And all you want to do is wake up into love and kindness and revive that incredible infatuation like you first fell in love.
And then I believe that there's something even greater that's underneath the infatuation. Because the infatuation, one of the things we call that in psychology is called the ghostly lover. And one of the things that happens when you first come together, before you really know the other person, there's a projection that that person is going to be everything you ever imagined them to be. So they're already it when you first come together. And that's what contributes to The infatuation.
And you don't even really know the person.
Right. That's
so it's all a projection.
It's a projection that they're going to meet all of your needs. Now, what is far more exquisite and beautiful is to be fully known, the good, the bad, the ugly, the gorgeous, every idiosyncrasy, every quirk, every...
fault.
Every fault. What do I... Eccentric expression is adorable to your spouse.
And you
that is love.
And you are completely embraced.
And imagine the depth that goes deep like the ocean, that is based in a foundation that is real versus something that is just fanciful flight of magical thinking in the beginning. It can be far superior to be fully known and to be fully loved.
Yeah, because I don't think any of us really trust that initial infatuation. And yet we all want that depth again. We all want to fall in love again. You know, and it is called falling, right? You know, it's funny that we don't call it, you know, oh, he ascended into love because he got married. You know, it's a falling thing. And then you get up, and like Tamara's talking about, when you get to see that the person you're with embraces this little idiosyncrasy and that fault and that eccentric habit and, you know, all the little nuances that can be so annoying that we overlook them and say, you know what, this is my wife and I love her. And I've noticed this, you know, waking up in the morning, I make it a point that I find some part of my wife to just adore, and I'll kiss her on the cheek over and over, or I'll grab her hand and kiss her hand, or rub her feet or something. I love every inch of her body, frankly. And I love to find a part of it and just kiss her and wake her up. Now, Tamara's a slow, she wakes up slow. She is like, she does not, if I say, hi, honey, how are you? I get a little like chirp, like from a bird. And then 10 minutes later, there's, you know, like, you know, it actually morphs into a different tones. And then after about 15 minutes, there's words that actually come out. And she'll tell you, I am like, you know, when as soon as my eyes are awake, I'm up. You could call me on the phone and I'd pick up the phone and you'd swear I was wide awake. So we're very different people. And if I wake Tamara up abruptly, she is annoyed. Anyone would be. It's a shock for her. Now, for me, it's no problem. You know, I'm just wired that way. But being considerate of that, being kind in how I wake her up, being kind in how I kiss her or touch her. And there's always things to learn. You know, I was rubbing Tamara's feet the other day. And, you know, I'm thinking, all right, I'm going to get in there and help her and get those muscles loosened up. Because she spends a lot of time on her feet, you know, walking around. And she, I was hurting her. And she's been trying to tell me, you're hurting me. And so now I touch her feet like feathers, just like, you know, I'll rub cream on them or whatever. I just, you know, but very gently. And she'll tell you, you know, I work a lot with my hands. I love, you know, working out with my hands and making them strong. And so I don't realize sometimes what I'm doing when I'm like, I'm thinking, wow, I'm going to get in there. Now, I've got to be careful that my lack of kindness or my, that if there's a frustration, that might work its way out through my hands when I touch her. So it's really important to clear these things up.
And one of the things that's so enlightening is being able to take a look at what was your videotape growing up? What did you witness as far as relationships in your parents, in your parent, in your relationship with your mother or your father? Whether it was there, whether it was absent, whether it was conflictual, whether it was overbearing, whether it was strong, whether it was loving, whether it was considerate, whether it was kind. There is the full gamut in the human experience that we get to have. But whatever we experience primarily in our early on relationships tends to be what we gravitate towards in our adult life or when we're looking for a life partner. For someone to share the rest of our life with.
And Tamara, I mean, can we even, you know, I know there's a myth out there. People think, oh, I'm not going to do what my parents did, or I'm going to learn from what my parents did and do the other things that work. The fact is, you will only do what you learned. You can't do something you didn't learn.
Unless there is one way to break that vow, one way that I know of. I'm sure there's other ways, but there's one consistent theme that comes up in being able to break the vow of what you grew up with. And that is being able to have compassion what you went through and forgiveness towards the people that hurt you.
And if you can, what's available then?
You won't turn around and do it to someone else.
Right. So you won't do the perpetrations that were done to you.
To someone else.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what will you do instead? Because, you know, we can't do what we don't know. If you don't speak German, you don't speak German. So when it comes to healthy relationships, nobody speaks that language.
Right. But it's like what comes up when you ask them, what gives you goosebumps? What have you witnessed other people doing? What TV show? What movie? What experience are you committed to having yourself that you've witnessed in other people? And that's everywhere. And see, love, when we remember that love is who we are, we never have to seek for love. It's who we are. We just have to remove the barriers that prevent us from experiencing it. So in removing those barriers, that's just what we're doing, is we're forgiving what happened to us. Not because it lets someone else off the hook, but because it frees us.
Well, and I know what you were leading to before, which is seeing, like, being able to see a map of what happened to you. Tamara does a process called the genogram. Mm-hmm. And you can talk a little bit about where that came from. But in the genogram, she literally will draw a map out where you say, all right, my parents are here, and you know, if they're alcoholic or if there's conflict. She has a way of visually representing that on a piece of paper. And as much as I'd like to think, well, look, everybody has parents and brothers and sisters, all maps are going to look somewhat similar, it is unbelievable to see your genogram and to see, like, this is the map of how you were created and your personality developed. And it's so nuts to see it, because every time I've seen her do it, people are like, oh, well, I make sense. And those are the things that I guess you're talking about. If you can see your genogram, see the rampant alcoholism, or maybe there's just a little bit of it. Like what
the genogram is it gives you an aerial perspective. There are a few significant points of being able to map out your life. And you take a look at the birth order. Birth order is very important, because the firstborn tends to be most like the father, the characteristics. The second born tends to be like the mother. The third born tends to take on the characteristics of both. And then the fourth born and the ones beneath that tend to take on the dynamics of the family. So if we were to take a look at the birth orders, we were to take a look at the grandparents, what we take a look at is the ethnicity. Where did they migrate from? Are they German descent, Jewish descent, Islam descent,
passionate Latin descent,
African American descent. I mean, every single descent it's beautiful in and of itself. So we take a look at all of that. Then we look at the relationships with the siblings, the aunts, the uncles, the grandparents, and we look at the relationship between the parents and the grandparents and what was passed down in their generation. And then what did their parents do that was so much better? Because what we take a look at is the evolution through the generations tends to get better and better and better with each generation. And that's really good news.
Yeah. And you can get your genogram through Tamara. Who actually developed the genogram? Was it?
It comes from the Bowen theory.
Okay.
There's several different psychological theoretical foundations, which all of psychology is founded upon. And the Bowen theory is one of my favorites.
So if you're listening right now, and I know, you know, Max loves for people to have like awakening insights and breakthroughs, and that's just part of the, you know, Max Tucci show. So that's what we all, you know, he's always reminding us, you know, really pay attention, listen. So ask yourself, are you firstborn, secondborn, thirdborn? If you're firstborn, are you most like your father? If you're second, are you most like your mother? If you're third, are you most like both? Take a look at your brothers and sisters. Is that true of them? And then if you're fourth born, do you have the characteristics of the entire, you know, the entire group? Mm-hmm. Now, for those of you that don't know, Tamara is a licensed psychotherapist. She was a social worker for 11 years. So she's been, you know, very intensely involved in family dynamics and making some profound decisions and arrangements for couples. She also is a professor of human sexuality, which she taught for 7 years at a college level. And my background is I have been doing a lot of life coaching with executives, mostly super achievers, but running workshops and seminars, typically 3 to 5 day workshops and seminars on how to really get to know yourself and self-actualization. So both of us have spent tens
and
of
also,
thousands
Greg
of hours.
Was a monk for 8 years, so he spent many hours in contemplative meditation.
That was my escape from relationships.
There you go.
So I thought.
And we all have escapes, whether it's into college or whether it's into knowledge or whether it's into shopping or workaholism. There's something that, you know, the human experience is such that it contrasts with the spiritual yearning, unless it doesn't. And what's so beautiful is being able to have that integration of the two. And one of the things that is so profound in taking a look at the history, at the genogram, is when we do go back and we take a look at that, and we do have a complete circle of forgiveness that brought us to the place that we are right now, we quit making the people we're with pay for what the people of the past did. Because there's something like a skip in a broken record that continues to repeat itself over and over and over again. And if you're really honest with yourself, notice if your relationships don't end up down the same rut, just a different package, over and over and over again, trying to close the loop, trying to heal the wound, trying to honor the gaping hole that is left from unfulfilled dreams. And one of the most beautiful realizations that when we get in touch with what our soul yearns for, everything we could have ever imagined is available at our fingertips. And you don't have to sacrifice anything to be with anyone. There's no price to pay. And you do get what you want. Can you imagine being able to tell your spouse, "My God, this is above and beyond anything I could have ever imagined to be with you."
Yeah, better than the infatuation.
Yeah.
Because when you've truly forgiven, and this is the thing that I learned about forgiveness, because forgiveness was hard for me for many years. And recently, in the last few months, I've had a huge breakthrough with forgiveness where I've just noticed, I'm like, wow, everyone's off the hook. And here's how it was presented to me. And I know Tamara has some, she's going to give you some, you know, some, she has some differing perspectives on it. Let's just put it that way. But what I realized was that just as I wake up from a nightmare, and you're awake, when you wake up from a nightmare, and in the nightmare, someone's hurt you or stabbed you or, you know, lost an arm or something, and you wake up, it's as if it never happened. So in the waking state, the dream never happened. You don't go to the person in your dream and call them up and say, "I can't believe what, you know, I'm so traumatized by what happened in my dream last night, and it was you that did it." I mean, that's insane, right? So I've been getting a lot of solace by realizing, number one, you know, if you got issues with God and, you know, you're wondering about God forgiving you, and this is something that, you know, we're happy to take calls, by the way, and we want to give you a number, 323-203-0815. If you have anything that you want to talk about tonight, give us a ring, especially the topic of kindness and forgiveness. But, you know, God, people that are like, you know, "Oh, God, forgive me." God does not hold a grudge. You got to get that. So, like, this thing about forgiveness and God, you're the one that needs to forgive. And in order to do it, you got to come up with a way, some tool where you can literally forget. Whether it's realizing the past does not exist and never really did. The only thing that does exist is the present. And so I want to present to you that it's possible to get to a place where you feel so forgiving that whatever happened to you, it's as if it literally didn't happen. And if you can think of it that way, like, okay, so
I like that,
you know, so that you were, because we were talking in the car on the way over here, and Tamara and I said, you know what, the truth is the things that happened to us literally didn't happen. And getting to that space, and she immediately chimed in and said, "Wait a minute." And what was it you were talking about? The body?
Well, it's very unfair for someone to hear that something never happened to them when they've been raped, when they've been through a trauma, when they've experienced horrific things. Something happened and there are witnesses to it.
Yes.
So one of the most beautiful things to be able to acknowledge is that, yes, that whatever's done to this body is untouched, unscathed within our soul, within our spirit, within the place of us that is eternal. That part of us is unhurt.
Well, and the thing that's...
Yet our body has experiences on earth that we believe are so real, to tell someone that it's not would be offending.
Well, and people don't have a connection with their soul, most people, where they could say, oh, yeah, my body's just in a dream. And I'm so we're in the dream, in this conversation of the dream, and I think the compassion you're talking about is if you recognize that it's in that dream level. Now, speaking from above that dream, in the awakened state of complete forgiveness, it's easy to look back and say, well, this never happened to me. Now, I'm not saying that it never happened to you. I'm not saying that the harmful things that happened to you didn't happen to you. What I am saying is that I've gotten to a place where I realized that the things that happened to me that were harmful and hurtful were just things that happened, and that all of the grudge and anger and frustration that I had around them, I was able to see was a projection into the things that happened, and that, by the way, was the thing that was making me suffer. So it's a tough knot point to have when you're having this conversation in the nightmare. But if you actually could get to a place, if you can imagine, just imagine this for a second, that there's nothing to fix in life, that life isn't broken, that you don't have to achieve a goal to be loved, and that life is living you perfectly. In fact, just imagine this for a second. Just let go for a second of all the opinions and beliefs you have and just embrace this. You're perfect. Mm-hmm. Not like, you know, as a belief, but what if you just got that you have been created perfectly as you? Mm-hmm. No one else is perfectly you. And you're perfect, exactly as you are, without anything changing. And I'm not asking that you reason this. Let go of your mind for a minute and just see if you can touch the feelings in your chest. Drop into your heart and just play a game with me and imagine, what if it's true? What if it's true that you're perfect? What if it were true? Can you touch just as a daydream? You know, like you could daydream flying like a bird, right? You could imagine the wind blowing past your ears and your wings spread out and you could swing left and right. You could imagine that. So just imagine, what if you're perfect?
Flaws and all.
With everything that you consider to be a fault, what if it's just, what if you could just embrace it and say, yeah, wow, I am so perfectly human and so perfectly me. And just sit with that for a second. Like, what if there's nothing wrong? Mm-hmm. What if life is living you just fine? Doesn't need your help. Doesn't need your control. Doesn't need to be fixed. You don't need to fix you. No one needs to fix you. And anyone that has a problem with you, they have a problem.
Well, and imagine what kind of space that would open up for whoever you're in the room with. You would be a soft place to land. You would be a comfort. You would be a disarming force of anxiety or chaos. And you would be a pillar of peace that people would naturally gravitate to you like a magnetic force, because love is attracted to itself. And fear and attack is also attracted to itself. And you stand at the fork in the road.
And we have, through history, incredible examples of people that have lived this way. Whether it's Nelson Mandela, or Mother Teresa, or Gandhi, or Martin Luther King. Now, your mind may race and find the faults in these people, just like it races to find faults in you. Because we are addicted to an experience called guilt, primarily imposed on us through institutions like school and education and church and all. And we're addicted and committed habitually to things like, you know, anger and sadness. But if you let go of that for a second and you realize that you have right now the opportunity to reach out and pet an animal or to make a kind phone call, or to reach out with love. This is what is amazing about human beings, is they can take a moment and become truly divine and reach out in the middle of pain and hurt and anger. I mean, it's incredible that people that we've done some counseling with, people that were literally on their deathbed, and one of them that comes to mind is a 22-year-old boy dying of leukemia, who on his deathbed was giving his family incredible reassurances about the afterlife and about how grateful he was for the years that he was alive. And he died a few minutes after reassuring his family about some beautiful and amazing things that he was experiencing in transition. Now, there are a lot of people that die and they're angry and frustrated at that time. And so these people in your life, bring to mind some of the people that are your soft place to land. The people that you turn to when you're in need of kindness. And notice that those people, some of them, are amazing masters of letting go of anger and hurt and blame. They're even letting go of their agenda that I have to get to work on time because you need kindness right now. Or, you know, I can't deal with this. I've got my own family, because they get that in one of those snapshot moments when you stand at the fork in the road, those moments of life, that love is not a tough choice. It's the only choice, really.
And I think that that is the question always at the fork in the road, is what would love do now? What would love do now? And I'm reminded of a little boy that was living next door to an elderly couple, and he lost his wife. She died. And the little boy would frequently visit, and he had been gone for a couple of hours. And he came back, and his parents said, "Where have you been?" And he said, "I was just next door with the elderly gentleman." And they said, "Oh, yes, he's got to be really sad. You know, what did you say?" He said, "I didn't say anything. I just put my head on his lap, and I helped him cry. I just helped him cry."
So that kindness is innate. You know, we see in children, it's amazing. Kids can get angry and slap each other, and then 3 minutes later, they're playing and sharing and you know, having fun again. And animals are very similar to that. We have a couple dogs, and recent adoptee, just as a couple days ago, that walked up to the front door and looked at Tamara, and she looked into his eyes and said, "Oh, that's got to be our dog." And so we now have
we went to extensive measures to find its owner, and no one has claimed him.
We did. He's a very cute guy. He's got those human eyes that drive you crazy.
But there's unconditional love looking right back at you.
Yeah.
You know, those, and you know, one of the questions that came up today, even as I was hearing on the Oprah radio show, is who is God? Who is God? And unanimously, through many spiritual leaders, there really is no definitive definition, because once you define something, it limits it in some way. And the only way that you could describe it, would many of them would say, is that it's the notes of silence in between the music. It's the spark that lights every human being on the planet, every living thing. And it's the part of us that is eternal. It's the part of us that never dies, that's connected to our eternal sense of soul and self, and the part of us that knows that we'll never die. We'll never die. We'll shed this body, but there's an opportunity while we're here in the human experience to master the ultimate kinds of experiences that we yearn for.
So aside from God being dog spelled backwards, you bridge the gap for me, because we were talking about, you know, the dog, and then you jump to God. I thought where you were going to go with that is that what we know every religion says about God is that God is love.
Mm-hmm.
There's a source of it. And so, you know, if I were to say the source of love,
mm-hmm.
you know, for those of you that have a hang up with the word God, or, you know, there's difficulty forgiving and forgetting. I know I had a huge grudge against God for many, many years. And I've spent mm-hmm. a lot of time working with people, because, see, I was a monk for a bunch of years. So a lot of people would seek out, like, a life coach that if they had real serious spiritual issues, I'm the guy that they can vent with, right? Because I represented that for a while. And what I found was, you know, a lot of times it's incredibly refreshing when we let ourselves say the things that we think is going to get us a bolt of lightning, because the level of what love does, you know, imagine here's this little dog that shows up, primarily been living outside for a long time, you can tell, and he's got some outside habits, and we're, you know, training him to have inside habits, and Tamara is just, you know, he just looks at her and he knows he's got unconditional love. She is his soft place to land, and everybody needs one of those. And the people around you need a soft place to land, and it's a gift you give yourself every time you reach out for someone and you be that soft place to land for them, whether it's a kind word or, you know, just wanted to talk, just wanted to let you know I love you and was thinking about you, or, you know, I was thinking about you, I had this beautiful memory of when we did this together and I just wanted to let you know. Those are all that reaching out with love. That's that soft place to land. And you'd be amazed if you would stop and get receptive for just a minute, that little space between the notes that Tamara talks about, and just vacate for a second and let some name drop in, someone you could call, a phone call or a meeting, cup of coffee or a document, an email or something, just something you could do tonight. Who's the one person that you would be that little soft place to land, that expression, that just little kind word, someone that right now, and if you just let yourself be receptive for a second, a name will drop in, and I'll bet that if you would call that person and or send that email, they probably would be surprised that, wow, how did you know? We hear about this all the time. When you vacate, when you have that little blank space, and I spent a lot of years, you know, trying to master that blank space in meditation, because that's where incredible things happen. Like they would say, one of the techniques of meditation was to watch your breath. Watch it come in and watch it go out. And we did this for a few years. And then what they pointed out was, you know, as you're watching your breath, start being aware of the little space between the inhale and the exhale. It's only a fraction of a second, but just as you inhale and then your breath stops for just a second, just pay attention to that gap and then exhale. And don't worry too much about the inhale or the exhale. Just start paying attention to that gap. And naturally what happens is the gap gets a little wider because whatever we focus on expands. And after a while, after a few years of, you know, practicing these techniques, all of a sudden I found myself several times sitting in meditation and I was literally still and breathless, and just in an amazing peace. And when we're in that peace, without the chaos and chatter of the world, some little suggestion of love can drop in. And Tamara quotes, you know, I used to say in a workshop, you know, in my workshops, I used to say, look, you know, God doesn't have hands. So if your hands aren't doing that kind of work, If the source of love doesn't have hands and you're willing to be the source of love with your hands, then you're doing beautiful work with it. And let yourself be used in those gaps to create that forgiveness, that soft place to land.
And one of the most important places that it can start is with the people that are closest to you. So it's going to be in your intimate relationships. And when that is experienced on a consistent or ongoing basis, regardless of mistakes, because we're always going to make them, it's a trickle-down effect to every other relationship we encounter. And it's a beautiful experience to be an example for what is possible for other people. So that's why Greg and I have been so committed to doing this work, because we want to experience it ourselves. We want to have that unfiltered love that isn't thrown with a whole bunch of bricks and blocks in between that says, I can't do it because I'm scared, or this never happened to me, or I grew up this way and this is why I've got to be mean to you. No, the way you're brought up doesn't have to continue to be excuses, right? Ever.
Well, and you know, Tamara and I, we go through our struggles too, and one of the things I've learned is that, you know, forgiveness takes quite a long time.
And unless it doesn't.
Unless it doesn't. And for me, it did, because I really was holding a grudge for a lot of years. And here's what I learned. is the reason forgiveness takes a long time is because it takes quite a while to learn to stop hurting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It takes quite a while to learn to let go of the thoughts that you're addicted to, that I have been addicted to, those thought patterns, to loosen them up and finally get to a place where you're like, you know what? It really sucks to hold this grudge against someone, and I'm tired of these feelings, and I'm ready for a new way to look at this. And it's only until you get so tired of beating yourself up with unforgiveness, because let's face it, you know, you could be holding a grudge, and Oprah even talks about how, you know, she was, when she really got how important forgiveness was she was holding this grudge against this one person over and over. She saw the person laughing on a street corner, and it shocked her. She was like going, well, I'm hating this person, so they must be miserable. And the truth is, here they were happily going about their life. And they did something. They stumbled and bumbled and tripped on Oprah somehow, said something rude or did something inconsiderate. And she's holding this grudge. And we've all done that, held a grudge. And we've all heard the analogies. It's like, you know, it's like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. Or it's like lighting yourself on fire, hoping the other person dies of smoke inhalation. That's what unforgiveness is like.
Mm-hmm.
And so by holding this unforgiveness, what you're really doing is just torturing yourself. And as Tamara and I have, you know, we've discussed it, there people are so addicted to guilt or being martyrs or some kind of like, you know, to justify how tough life is because I've got pain in my life. And as soon as you get like ready to see how stupid that is, and you're ready to be done with the bad feelings that you create on top of life living you beautifully, that's when forgiveness becomes easy. When I sat back and said, you know what? I am so sick and tired. I don't like feeling angry anymore. And my anger always had a reason. And I got sick and tired of having reasons, and I started looking at, well, what's available here? And then I started coming up with these analogies like, okay, in a dream I wake up and it didn't happen. Maybe what's happening here where I pretend that somebody tried to hurt me and they did it against me and I'll never trust them again, maybe that's happened in some weird – because I don't have any recording of that was done to me. And I've seen in a courtroom, it drove me crazy. I was watching one of these – news, one of these things about how horrible murderers have done terrible things to children, and they showed this one scene where these two parents in a courtroom turned to the perpetrator and said with total kindness and compassion in their voice, they said, "Before you go off to spend the rest of your life in jail, I need you to know something first. And I need to tell you face to face without looking through a big, thick piece of glass. I forgive you." And that twisted me up, that I could see that this man who has a right to feel pain his whole life because his child has been taken from him by a vicious, you know, just throw the labels on top as much as you want to the perpetrator. But the fact is, he realized that holding a grudge and the anger and the pain that had killed his child and caused him so much pain, he wasn't willing to continue and extend it by holding a grudge against his perpetrator. And he just, right there in the courtroom, said, "I forgive you." And the reason that twisted me up is because I haven't experienced anything even as remotely as difficult as that. And many of you listening right now have. But there's never been a perpetration that someone hasn't successfully forgiven. So no matter how bad the thing is that you've been through. And yes, Tamar talks about, you know, when something happens to our body, the animal we live in that has these parts of our brain that respond and get seared and react and are terrified and have to protect us if we've been hurt over and over again in the same way, especially as children, your body does have to go through a process of healing. But you who live inside of it, the you that's going to live when the body dies. And I can promise you that's true. I've had the experience, I've been outside, you know, there's countless books written on the subject. There is a time when you, and you know you're not your body, when you will leave it And then there's a freedom from all that crazy programming in life.
And imagine if you can do that while you're here. And that's the process of being able to wake up from the nightmare, from the dream. And just because you haven't experienced losing a child, in no way mitigates the trauma you've experienced in your own life. There is a matter, there are differences in degree, but the human experience is that we all have undergone extreme situations.
Yeah, and by the way, Tamara's looking at it and talking directly to me right now. Because she, because I say I haven't been, but she knows I've.
Oh yes,
I've processed some pretty painful things. You know, I've lost a parent to alcoholism when I was
4 years
old.
Yeah, you don't want to minimize that because that is part of your pain is your credential.
Well, and that's and we've written a book about that, Tamara and I both, because what we've found is that when someone does forgive, when they finally do let go of the grudge. One of the incredibly healing things for the body, for the animal that they live in, is to say, for instance, someone struggled with alcohol, is that they actually become a sponsor or mentor of someone who is struggling with alcohol, and they get to see the incredible and profound grace and blessings on their life when someone is struggling with the difficulty they've been through. And we know that these are credentials. We know it. You know, I could sit here and tell you, you know, you can get over your cancer and it's not not a problem. Your immune system's just malfunction. And if you were to say to me, hey, Greg, have you ever had cancer? Well, no, I haven't. But, you know, I've heard from people. All right. It's a completely different thing. If you were listening to a woman or talking to a woman that says, listen, you can get over your cancer and you can, it'll heal, you can heal your body and you're, oh, we're just going to tweak your immune system. And she says, and you say to her, well, have you had cancer? Why, yes, I've had, if she explains to you that she's had a worse case of cancer than you have, and there's no trace of it in her body, and she's going to share her story with you, immediately you're listening. And you can tell that just being in her presence, you'd be healing.
Well, and one of the things I just heard from a couple today that did undergo a very tragic loss, and one of the things, the question that came to this couple was, you know, so many couples go through a divorce because the grieving process is so different, or can be, and then there's a lot of projection, and there's a lot of guilt, and the survivors, and the, many times the parents will split up. But one of the things that they were committed to seeing happen was that their love could grow bigger than the hole that was left in their heart. So one of the things was that they could honor the pain. They could honor the gaping wound of the loss. Come together and say, my life will be a testament of my child's life. I will be his living memorial by living well. And one of the things the woman said was, the little things that I just gave into, I no longer do. The things that are most meaningful to me, I say right out, right then and right there. I don't wait for another moment. I don't wait for another occasion. There may never be another occasion.
Yeah, life is way too short. You know, and Tamara and I, we there's some a series on YouTube, really fascinating series called Extraordinary People, and it's all about different people that have a variety of difficulties. And one is a boy. African-American, 22 years old now, but when he was 3, he got a severe tumor problem in his eyes, and he had both of his eyes removed. His mother made that decision. The doctor said, look, his tumors are growing. If they get down the nerve stem of and follow his eyes to his brain, he's gonna die of this tumor. And so she opted to have his eyes removed. And he had a couple siblings, and she treated him just like the other kids and said, you can do everything just like they can. And he learned to click and make
like a dolphin.
Like, you know, just like he was making a little clicking noise with his mouth. And this guy, you can see, watch him on you guys riding a bicycle. He's, you know, walking and missing things and riding a skateboard and missing things. And he knows his environment, and they had tests with him on a table and all. So, you know, and he smiles and he's happy and he's grateful for life. And I thought, you know, it's crazy, but we expect so much. Yeah. And, you know, we have 5 senses, and if one's lost, it think it's terrible. Well, what about on other planets where creatures only have 4 senses?
Well, and sometimes they say, too, is that it may be a saint having a rest.
Yes,
in this lifetime.
Yeah. They're born into the bodies of people that are a little bit difficult, and the saints just want to be cared for, and so they're born into those bodies.
But, yes, and with that, we want to kind of wrap up the show here tonight and just give a shout out to Max Tucci and thank him so much for allowing us to be here on Max and Friends and to include in the inner circle the possibilities that are available to us. And just to leave you with one parting thought here is that we're always choosing who we get to be at every given moment, that when we're hurt, I'm working on not hurting back and allowing the hurt to be honored and choose love.
And if you want to know more about your genogram or forgiveness or be taken through a process, you can reach Tamara and I through heartvirtue.com, HEARTVIRTUE, heartvirtue.com. And we'd love to have any questions, help out in any way we can. Thank you, Max. Thank you, LA Talk Radio.
Thank you, Ronan.
And be forgiving and kind.
Love you guys. Have a great week.